Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right, here we go. What a beautiful, beautiful day in St. Louis as we take you into the weekend. Sue is off today, unfortunately, but we do have a Reardon Roundtable. The panel is assembled. Obviously, Fred and Ethan will be here. Ethan Hannaford will be tackling Sue's news. So the standard is very high, but he always does a great job. Let me say hello to the panelists this afternoon. Donna Behringer is back with us. She is the St. Louis City Comptroller, but we haven't seen you since you took that gig. How are you?
I am crazy but good. Crazy because I do what I do. Good because I love what I
do. Right, and I know that you're working really hard, so we appreciate it. But seriously, honestly, let me introduce Mike Elam's here. You know Mike because he fills in on the station. He is a St. Charles County councilman as well, and Mike and I go way back to our Camo X days. Hello, Mr. Elam. How are you, man?
I'm good. It's good to be back.
I'm doing well. Jeff Rainford, former chief of staff for Mayor Slay with Rainford & Associates, also here this afternoon. Hi, Jeff.
I hope everybody's watching M-I-Z.
Yeah, and he says that Z-O-U because, unfortunately, Ethan, here's something for you, Rainford. Ethan Hannaford, who is a sports guru, he's a play-by-play guy for Lindenwood, and he does some other play-by-play. He's never been to the zoo for a football game. Have you ever even been to Columbia?
No.
He's never been
to
Columbia. So I have an awesome tailgate.
I don't think he's been to a barber in like months.
Oh, Elam. Wow.
How about that?
What a shot.
Whoa.
He usually wears hats
exactly.
So you don't see that.
And just like that,
but
he
yes,
sets my mic on.
The reason Rainford said that is because Ethan is wearing his Bama gear this afternoon while I have my Mizzou gear on. I can't even remember the reason that he has bad taste in football teams, but we'll discover that.
But he's doing a great job at Lindenwood, who, by the way, is 3-3 and 2-0 in the conference.
And they're a Division I football program.
Let's go, Lions.
By the way, and I get worried about this. I was telling you this, Elam. He does his play-by-play is excellent.
He does a
really
nice job.
Which sucks for me because then when I have a producer that's really good at something, they don't stick around for very long.
Short time here.
All right, Donna, let me start with you just a little bit to get caught up because we haven't spoken, and obviously, just to kind of get a bit of an overview of how your office has been running and you know, the challenges that you've had, and we'll get into some of the issues in the city. Obviously, there's national political issues that we'll cover this hour as well, but I thought we'd just catch up on what you're working on right now and how that's going.
Well, I'm trying to modernize the office, so that's the first thing, and we're slowly getting there. But what I tell people is that we're in charge of all contracts for the city of St. Louis. So any department, no matter what it is, we interact with them. And so it's been paper and pen for all these years. And so we've been working for the last 4 months since I got there to make it so it actually goes onto the computer.
Wow. And I was going to make a joke about adding machines, but you're telling me you haven't even gotten to computers yet.
Correct. So then we started doing our training. And what we found out was we have some departments in the city of St. Louis where the people who actually do turn in those paper contracts don't have computers. So we're working on training people on how to get onto the system that we use to actually use the computer. So that's where I'm starting from. Does that help?
It does help, but does that mean, you know, Rainford, your time working in the city of St. Louis, it goes back a little ways now. I mean, you would have thought that between the time that you left and now that there would be some upgrades in modern technology, but I guess you would be wrong, right?
Yes, you would be wrong.
Well, I mean, there's a reason that the voters elected Donna and threw Darlene Green out. I mean, I think there probably was a time, I don't know, 10 years ago before when Darlene Green was an effective comptroller, but it's been a really, really long time, and there's so much that Donna has to clean up while she also has to do her job, and she's doing that well. She's uncovered wrongdoing in the personnel department where they were trying to give Darlene Green a bigger pension than she was supposed to get, the sheriff's office, all kinds of other nonsense. So we always thought of the comptroller as the fiscal watchdog, and again, maybe there was a time in the deep dark past when that happened, but it's been a really long time. So, you know, she being in the office is a breath of fresh air, both literally, she is opening the doors so the taxpayers can see what's going on, and metaphorically, and that we have a professional in the office now. So it was long needed, and the city is better for it.
How fiscally challenged is the city right now?
Well, we're not fiscally challenged yet, and that's because we still have the ARPA funds and that we still have the RAMS funds. So what that means is we look healthy on paper because when we go out for bonding, they're like, oh, look at how much money they have.
Okay.
By the end of 2026, that will be an issue because that money will be gone. And you don't want to spend down all the RAMS money because then we have nothing to show to the bonding people that, look, we have a nice chunk of money sitting over here to do what we need to do.
So is that money currently earning interest?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
That money's earning interest.
Is going to come back to the city in terms of available income that you can use for the general fund, right?
Yes, and okay. We are using that for the tornado. So the interest
I saw something on that recently.
Yeah,
right.
$30 million, and we turned a lot of it over to United Way and Urban League so they can get it out into the community. But we deal with every single contract in the city of St. Louis. So at some point it hits my desk and I review them. And so what I found was I had some questionable contracts I was signing because I said, wait a minute, I'm drilling down and I say, this agency doesn't have a 990. They don't have a website. So you have to, if you're a nonprofit, do a 990. So what I have started is what's called risk assessment. And that's supposed to be done with those federal funds. And so now I'm making sure that risk assessment is there. And it doesn't mean that if somebody is, you know, small business can't get the money, it means that they're at high risk. And you, as the person who's giving them the city money, must have oversight on high risk companies.
So why is there, how much ARPA money is there? And then does that have to be spent by a certain time?
Yes.
And are there projects that are being, like this thing that I have out in my neck of the woods out in Fenton, Hillsborough Road, for people who know where Krause Farms is out there, 141 and 44. That was a project, it's a Valley Park project, was supposed to start a year ago. My understanding is ARPA money, and you know they delayed it a year because they had issues with permitting, blah blah blah, equipment. But that does that money have to be spent by a certain time, or are you just saying it will be?
They're saying that the deadline is December 31st, 2026.
Okay,
but we've been through these federal grants before because Obama had actually given some money during his tenure, and what they would do is if the project was moving, right, so you're in the project, that they would allow you to keep the money to pay, let's say the contractor to finish it out. So they knew you were in the middle of it, but they couldn't have it all spent down because that's going to happen. If you have a big construction that you're working on, and let's say you can't get your steel or your beams or your wood in time, they're not going to yank that. I hope they don't yank the money away in the middle of building something.
Right.
Next year is going to be a crazy year all across the country because everybody's got the same deadline of the end of next year. And not only, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's supposed to be completed and the paperwork filed.
Yes.
As the follow-up, because you have to have documentation of all the programs that you do. So that documentation has got to be filed by the 31st of 2016.
You know what's interesting? And you guys have been around government for a long time, and you've dealt with some of these things. So when going back to this Valley Park thing, just because it's been a pain in the ass for those of us who live there, you know, Rainford, it's right by Paradise Valley. You know where I live,
I
right?
Do.
So, you know, if you were going to go, Jeff plays some nicer courses than Paradise Valley, but it's a good course certainly for duffers.
It is.
Yeah. And so if you were going to go back there now, you'd have to go all the way back around to Gravoy to get back in there. You couldn't go the regular way. So when I was creating some issues about this on the radio and personally saying, hey, Valley Park, when is this going to start? And I said, can you send me the financials, right? So they sent everything. They sent me all the, you know, the contracts and stuff like that. It is unbelievable how much language, DEI language, all these other things that you have to bend over backwards for the federal government in particular to do. I'm reading this stuff. I'm not a lawyer, but it's nuts. It's shocking to me that any of these things get done. I mean, the lawyers have to be the hardest working people in departments because of all this federal language. You got to do things. You know, if you don't check the boxes on the minority contracts and the people who have to participate, you're out. You don't get the money, right? That's part of what they're trying to achieve when they send you federal money.
It's one of the biggest reasons why the Infrastructure and Jobs Act was passed in November of 21, and it was supposed to get broadband all across the country, right? $65 billion got put into this plan, and everybody's going to have high-speed internet. And still, as we sit here today, not $1 has been spread out around the country. Not one shovel has been put in the ground with IIJA money. Still. And we have no idea when that money is actually going to be done. But you have all
states. How is that even possible?
It's because the Biden administration didn't get it done before they left. And when the Trump administration came in, they looked at the Biden administration policies and a lot of what you're talking about, language and things that they put in there. And they said, hang on a second. I don't know that makes a lot of sense. So they went back and they made every state redo their broadband plan to resubmit everything. So everybody had to basically pull back all
start
the work they've
scratch.
Been working, start from scratch and resubmit.
That's Mike Elam, Jeff Rainford's here, Donna Berenger, who's the St. Louis City Comptroller. Just quickly before we take a break, just because I don't know how, and maybe the question for you, Donna, would be, how do you give oversight to all of these millions of dollars that are being handed out, whether it's from the Rams money or something else? There was a story in the Washington Post from earlier this week, it might have been last week actually, where the story said military veterans are swamping the U.S. government with dubious disability claims, including cases of brazen fraud totaling tens of millions of dollars that are exploiting the country's sacred commitment to compensate those harmed in the line of duty. I bring it up because we were told earlier this year, Mike, you might remember this, there's no fraud and abuse. Where's the fraud and abuse? Well, they're talking about $193 billion for the Department of Veteran Affairs to compensate 6.9 million disabled veteran on the presumption that their ability is work impaired. Most of the claims are legitimate, but there are so many millions of claims. This is the Washington Post, that are claims for minor or treatable afflictions that don't hinder employment, such as, and this is their line, hair loss, jock itch, and toenail fungus. I swear, that's in the Washington Post.
Wow.
So, I mean, how do you, I don't know how you do it where, you know, you got people ripping you off. You have bad politicians, as we know we've had here in St. Louis. You have the federal bureaucracy. It sounds impossible to get stuff done.
I don't think it's impossible. What I do tell people, it can be overwhelming at times. So an example I'll give you, which I actually ran the report. So we do have certain agencies that get a lot of funding from different buckets in the city of St. Louis. So I actually ran a report that showed me each organization and where they were getting money from the city of St. Louis, so I can let people know they're getting it from, let's say, CDA, and they're getting Rams money, and they're getting money here, because I want people to know. We are funding very well for this tornado. I need people to understand our mayor's doing a great job. We have a lot of agencies that we are paying that are getting paid, so I don't know where that's coming from. And they're out there doing the work. But I
you're sure
through.
They're out there doing the work? Because oh. I'm 2 weeks ago today, I toured North City. I didn't see a lot of work being done. I saw a lot of rubble, saw a lot of houses that were not there anymore.
Well, let's set that aside for a second, because that's a whole different deal. That's not because of red tape. That's simply because the money's not there yet.
Okay.
But on your issue, how do you, and when I was there, how do you defend against these things? You defend against them because you have an FBI and a U.S. attorney in the Eastern District, which is St. Louis, that are veteran prosecutors that are not there for political purposes. They're not there to throw immigrants out. They're not there to go after President Trump's enemies. They are there to go against white-collar crime and criminals. There's a guy named Hal Goldsmith who's done it very well over the years. You have veteran prosecutors like that, and they get tips. We, in the mayor's office, we would give them tips. Other people would give them tips. And, you know, every once in a while, what has to happen in St. Louis and other cities like it is somebody's, about three or four of these crooked politicians or crooked developers or crooked contractors got to go to jail. And then everybody flies right for a while. Then everybody gets sloppy again. And then Hal comes in and does another series of indictments. And then everybody flies straight again. There's a big, Donna's got a big role to play. But as you said, it's just too much for her to do it alone. So the U.S. attorney and the FBI can do it. And now we actually have a real attorney general in Catherine Hanaway. And I think she can do it, too. They have to be watchdogs, too, and not just be political.
All right, hang tight. Donna Berenger is here, the St. Louis City Comptroller, and Mike Elam and Jeff Rainford. It's a Reardon Round.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Donna Behringer is here. She is the St. Louis City Comptroller. Mike Elam from the St. Charles County Council. Jeff Rainford with Rainford and Associates. Let's kind of segue into some national politics here. And let me play you the debate with Abigail Spanberger and Winsome Sears last night in Virginia. And the reason that this is important is because there have been some text messages that were revealed a couple of weeks ago from John... Fred called him John Jay. I think it's Jay Jones, right? Yes, it's Jay Jones. Every once in a while, see, there's a Cardinals reference in my material. Jay Jones, in which he was threatening and wishing death, or at least the possibility of death, on the children of his political opponents. So this gets out there in public. But remarkably, Mike, this is where I'm fascinated, because you can apply this to here in Missouri. Let's say there's a Democrat or a Republican that comes up with something like this in their past. It's pretty, you know, grotesque and disgusting and unacceptable behavior. And there aren't any Democrats that are saying that they're distancing themselves from this guy. So last night there's a debate, and here's Spanberger trying to answer questions.
Were you aware of these messages before they were released publicly? And will you continue to endorse Jay Jones as the next Attorney General of Virginia? You have 60 seconds.
The comments that Jay Jones made are absolutely abhorrent. I denounce them when I learned of them, and I will denounce them every opportunity I get.
So she goes on in that debate, and she just doesn't, she says, I'll denounce them, but she doesn't distance herself from Jay Jones. It's fascinating to me. You guys all know politics. There has to be a reason for it. I know that Spanberger has a lead on Winsome Sears right now, who's the lieutenant governor. Glenn Youngkin is the governor. But Rainford, in a situation where something like that happens, you know crisis politics, why wouldn't the Democrats distance themselves and say, no, we're not going to endorse him? They want to hold on to that power so much that I guess they're not allowed to say that?
So I don't know the dynamics there. So the person who the candidate you just had on the air, has she endorsed the, are they
yes.
running as
so
a ticket?
So they kind of run as a ticket a little
bit.
Here's
what often happens is I'm pretty sure that when Donna ran, for instance, Kara and Donna did not run as a ticket. Now, if Kara did something wrong and Donna disavowed it, that's about all she can do, because you don't really run as tickets. If they're running as a ticket, then yeah, then she's going to have to figure out, am I going to cut this guy free or not? But if they just happen to be on the ballot at the same time, I don't know what more should be expected of you than you say this guy did a terrible thing.
So these are separate races. She's running for governor, and again, she's got a pretty comfortable lead right now in the polls. Jay Jones is the Democrat nominee for Attorney General. So there's been a lot of criticism on the left, but again, it's amazing to me that she was asked a very simple yes or no question last night in that debate, and four or five times refused to say yes or no.
Isn't he the one who said, just to make sure that I'm caught up, isn't he the one that talked about shooting his opponent?
Yes.
So in this climate, I don't know why, especially after the Charlie Kirk situation and the hot button issue, the political violence that's going on right now, I don't know why she wouldn't feel comfortable in stepping out and saying, I'm against any political violence and talking about anything like that. And I don't know if he meant that literally, or at least to say something about, I wished he would have pick different wording like that. But to say nothing, to really disavow it, doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
He said something about pissing on the graves of certain Republican delegates. Now, this was a few years ago. He went on to put a hypothetical scenario in the text message in which he had a gun, two bullets, and the choice to shoot Adolf Hitler, former Cambodian dictator Pol Pot, and then Virginia House Speaker Todd Gilbert, a Republican. In that scenario, he said he would shoot Gilbert twice. Spoiler, put Gilbert in the crew with the two worst people you know, and he receives both bullets every time.
Well, I will say this. And this is, we can blame both parties of it, but certainly President Trump is you know, the leader in the clubhouse, and that is the rhetoric among the left and the right. And I no longer consider myself to be in the left. I almost consider myself to be an independent at this point. But the rhetoric between the left and the right and what is acceptable and what is allowed to go on is becoming harsher and harsher and more violent and more violent. And already Republicans have forgotten about all the speeches or the speech the president made before the riot inside the Capitol. It's certainly true that there are Democrats who have wound up people when the Black Lives Matter protests were going on and turned violent. And, you know, so I would just say, if it were me and I was a voter, I would just take zero tolerance on the left and zero tolerance on the right for anybody who uses this kind of language. I would vote against this guy. But for the right to say, oh, it's all left wing, only the left is doing it, is simply not consistent with the reality. Well, it's happening on the right and the left, and they both ought to cut it out.
But we can have this argument, but the difference to me is that my side, Mike and I have been called Nazis, and we are siding with the Gestapo and all this stuff. Like, I saw a preview last night. I'm going to have John O'Leary on the show in a couple hours. His movie that is based on his life, Soul on Fire, opens. And there was a World War II Nazi-themed movie, and I can't remember what it was. I saw the trailer for when I was getting ready last night at Ronnie's to see this. And, you know, you think about the atrocities that went on during the Holocaust are indescribable. Like, I try to explain some of this to my daughter, who's 10 years old. It's still well above her comprehension level. But to make references to 80 million people who voted for Trump and basically put them in the category of someone that awful on the planet, that we take offense to that, because we're not calling you guys, we call you crazy because you got people in your party that are crazy. But
the president is using some pretty extreme language about the left. But I also say, you can go on the internet and find anybody to say all kinds of, I mean, you go to the QAnon people and they're saying, if you said QAnon represents conservatives and Republicans, they don't. And if you go on there and you actually see some of these anarchists or some of these crazy people and say, oh, that's the left. Now, if you said,
I'm not talking about
Schumer,
them. I'm talking about candidates here. Yeah,
well, then, you're talking about one candidate, and if I were in his state, I mean, and as a Democrat, I wouldn't vote for him in the primary.
But why
I don't care if he's
so
the
hard?
Only one on the ballot. You take a zero tolerance to it, but you take it, you can't. What we end up having in this country is the left says, oh, look at the rhetoric of the right, and they ignore the rhetoric on the left, and the right does the flip side. You know what, everybody? I do. Clean up your own house first,
Mike,
then you can point fingers.
Is the rhetoric the same on both sides?
No, it's not the same. You don't. You have mainstream Democrats in highly elected positions who are going to the worst extremes to what you're pointing at. You can call people names. I get it. It happens all the time.
Bernie
but
Sanders,
you don't go that far.
Bernie Sanders, I played this on the roundtable last week, said that we're in the worst crisis since the Civil War. I mean, that. There's no legitimacy to that. We have problems in this country. We have challenges. But to compare what we're going through in 2025 to the Civil War is ludicrous.
Hold on a second. Joe Biden was president, the right was using the exact kind of language. You had ads for the survivalists saying the world is going to come to an end now. Buy all these meal kits because the world's going to come to an end. Agree?
That wasn't like a political pact.
Hang on
that.
A second. Donna was promised, since Jane isn't going to be here, that she was going to get to talk this time.
Well,
I feel like she's got something to say, so polite to wait to jump in here.
No, okay. The only thing I have is that I feel that, the Democrats are looking at the Republicans saying, well, they're doing it, so if they can do it, so can I. And so they've all decided to be the worst of each other. That's what I truly believe. And so there's people like me that all I want to do is do my job and do it right. And we get lost in the shuffle because people...
There's truth to that. And this is what I've said, and I'll include you. I've said that about Kara. One of the things that I like about Kara is that you guys aren't doing news releases on national political topics that have nothing to do with the city of St. Louis. You are focused, hyper-focused on your job and on the city. That's, to me, refreshing from the mayor's office instead of just going to the Alphabet PLO, and not the PLO, but the Palestinian flag and all this other stuff that we see other mayors like Brandon Johnson and some of the other urban mayors doing.
But when the president says, I hate my enemies, where is a single Republican saying, Mr. President, stop using that rhetoric? You're asking the left, which it's legitimate, you're asking the left to police its own. I don't see any evidence that the right is policing its own.
Well,
I don't either.
I think there's extreme stuff on the right, but we didn't have...
From the president.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
But we... There weren't to people say I hate cheering my enemy on the assassination
is, how about the,
of
how about the riot, said it, how about the riot in the Capitol? Yes,
he laughed when he said it.
How about the
and
riot inside the Capitol?
He was joking about the fact that
Well, that was
Charlie,
outrageous, Jeff. It was outrageous.
He was joking about the fact that Charlie Kirk's wife had such a huge moment when she said, I forgive the guy who killed my husband. And he was kind of making a little joke about, you know, how great she is and how she's so much better than he is because he hates his enemies when he's in a competition. But he wasn't calling them the worst extreme that we've ever seen in the history
what's
of the
worst,
world.
What's the worst
and
left
making
wing?
Them a Hitler.
No, Hitler was right wing. What's the worst left wing thing you could say about somebody? That they're a communist. That's the worst left thing. That's
and you
the
got
equivalent.
An actual communist running for the mayor
okay,
of New York
you
City.
Go. And this
so
is
there.
My point. This is my point. Each side.
But that's accurate.
Each side.
But he calls himself that, not us.
Each side, one person, each side justifies their extreme language and criticizes
the
other one.
The guy who's running for the office called himself that.
One guy.
So when you call
no, Trump
him
is
that.
Saying Democrats are communists. That's one guy. I'm a Democrat. I'm not a communist. He's saying I hate all of them.
No, you were
communists.
An independent.
Yeah,
five
he's an independent.
Ago.
Exactly.
You
thank
just
you,
went
Mike.
Back to the left.
Exactly. Rainford, keep it consistent. We're coming back with more. It's the Rear and Roundtable on a Friday.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday afternoon. Mike Elam is in the house with us. You hear him often on 97.1 FM Talk filling in. Thanks for coming in and making some time for us today. Mike, Jeff Rainford. Also, I usually do ladies first. I apologize. Donna Behringer is here. The
Save
Louis
the best
Comptroller.
For last.
Exactly.
I see how that works.
That's what it is. Just a couple of things I want to mention for the next hour. We'll have Ethan handling Sue's news, and then my friend Paul Hall on entertainment, talk about some of the movie releases, including Soul on Fire, and I'll talk about that a little bit at the end of the roundtable, too. John O'Leary's story is fantastic, and John's going to join us at 5:32 tonight to talk about the movie and his life and the craziness that has surrounded his story, because it's really incredible. And this movie was filmed here in St. Louis, which is a pretty big deal. So there was Nobel Prize awarded this morning, the Peace Prize. It was, you know, one of those things yesterday where people were saying Trump should get the Nobel Prize. They voted on it on Monday. Okay, so he wasn't going to get the Nobel Prize, and he probably wouldn't get it if they voted on Thursday anyway. But here's what I would say. And Jeff, we can start with you on this one. I think that this peace deal is amazing, but we also have all lived through enough ceasefires and peace deals, and we've seen things collapse. So the first step is very important. If they achieve what they're supposed to achieve with the return of these hostages, and unfortunately, I think there's only 20 of them that are alive. They have to find the bodies.
Yeah, 28, I think, that have passed.
Yeah, there's a lot. It's 48 total, right? Yeah. So 20 that are alive. But look, if this happens and we start going down, now phase two is going to be much more difficult, I think. That is an incredible achievement. Even some people in your party are saying nice things.
Oh,
right
no,
now.
Absolutely. So, you know, I pride myself at thinking for myself and not just going with, you know, left, you know, liberal orthodoxy or whatever. If he's done this in an unconventional way and it is working, it's not there yet, as you pointed out. But let's just say that this thing goes to its ultimate conclusion and it works. It will be a major, major historic foreign policy achievement for the president. And I say that without equivocation. And the way he went about it, which is basically to announce a deal and kind of force the parties to, you know, say, OK, well, we got a deal, and then figure out the details, is unorthodox. But it seems like it's working. It has a really good chance of working. I hope that it works. I'm rooting for it to work. And it would be a signature achievement for this administration.
I'm always skeptical about everything. But, man, when they rolled this out, Mike, you know, I think a lot of us had questions. And then when it came together this week, and I guess Hamas will not have, you know, any leadership, which surprises me because they're losing their leverage if they give the hostages back. But then the question becomes, what happens to this area? What happens to Gaza? Who rules it? And, you know, can you get people? Because obviously both sides have been, it's unbelievable that this has been going on 2 years in this era. And not only do you have, you know, tens of thousands of civilians who have died in the conflict, but all these people in Israel who were ripped from their families because they had to go back into military service because they have, you know, it's required when you get out of, you know, your higher education, maybe during that whole process, you have to go into the military, but you can get called back in, and that's what's happened. So these families have been split apart. There's been a loss of some support in Israel because the war is going on so long. So it looks like we may be toward the end here.
Yeah, I'm hoping.
I think it really speaks to the fact, though, of Trump's type of leadership is the type of leadership that gets things done. And I go back to him and Reagan, who they do it differently, for sure, but they do it from the same part. And that is they come at it from a position of strength. And people around the world, I think, are afraid of Trump. And probably from Jeff and Donna's point of view, they should be, right? But I go back to, I grew up on television in the 70s, right? So it reminds me of when Fonzie was teaching Richie how to be tough, and Richie just wasn't tough. And he's talking tough to this guy, and he's about ready to get in the fight, and he comes, well, Fonz, I don't understand. I'm doing everything you told me. I got the leather jacket. I'm doing the tough voice, and he's not backing down. What's going on? He said, oh, I forgot one thing. At some point in your life, you had to have hit somebody. And I think what really gives Trump that credibility around the world is he has punched you in the face. He has killed Soleimani. He has gone after other people. He has not been afraid to go into Iran and do that bomb that destroyed their nuclear program that was all there. So he has put together the power behind his voice to where those people know this guy means business. We should probably follow through. Now, to your other point, I am worried because we have a huge history of vacuums being filled with really radical people. And that's going to be the biggest challenge.
Right.
I mean, it all around the world, whenever you have these vacuums that happen in leadership, it gets filled a lot of times with people that were worse than the people that we took out. Now, I think because Iran is not the Iran that they used to be, and you don't have the same thing in Syria, you don't have the same thing with the Houthis and everybody else that Iran was funding. Since they don't have that funding source, I think Hamas is at a point where they have never been before.
The challenge for President Trump, as far as being the leader of the United States, is his inconsistency. What he did really well here is he put pressure on the bad guys.
He did.
What he's doing really, really badly in Ukraine is he's putting pressure on the good guys. He needs to take this same model and put this same pressure on the Soviets and 100% back the Ukraine the same way he did Israel. He did it 100% right in Israel. He needs to do the same thing in Ukraine. And that's his problem, is his whole, all these policies are sort of ad hoc or hit or miss. There's not really an overriding, you know, thinking behind it. But if he takes this same approach with Israel and Palestine, he takes the same approach with Ukraine and Russia, I think we will get a better outcome in Ukraine than we're getting right now.
I think what's different, though, is you saw with the Middle East, the Middle Eastern countries, the Arab countries, have come to Trump's side, and they've sided with him to say this
Europe
has got to end.
Europe is on Ukraine's side.
Europe has been very mushy at best
to go
against Russia. And what you've seen is Russia is the same size as us when you're talking about military power, and that's really all they have. They don't have anything besides
he's
military.
He's such a tough guy. He took on the Palestinians, and I give him credit for that, and I already had. They're not exactly a world power. If you really are as tough guy as you are and not a bully, let's see you take on a world power. Take on Russia and get them the hell out of
Ukraine.
But
if you had the European countries who would get on board with us like the other Arab countries did, Russia's economy would collapse overnight, and they wouldn't be able to do anything, and money drives everything.
I'm not saying you either situation is more complicated. They're both very complicated situations, but it is a little bit more difficult. My position on Ukraine in sending resources, and we weren't only sending cash, it's military resources, planes, jets, bombs, et cetera, was I did not think, and I think a lot of us thought it was not a winnable war. I didn't see a path to victory. I'm not so sure I still see a path to victory, but we do know that Ukraine is inflicting damage upon Russian military sites, and as you indicated, the economy. And I think that from within Russia, there's also, you know, an exhaustion because you have all this happening with people dying and the people
millions,
of Russia. Right.
Millions of Russians.
But if he's really as tough as you say he is, again, I'm glad he stood down the Palestinians. They're a ragtag bunch of terrorists. You know, if you're really a tough guy, like Churchill did with the Nazis, stand down the Russians. Then I'll give you
well,
give him
time
credit
for
being a tough guy.
Don Berenger, on the government shutdown front, we have a government that's shut down right now. Does that affect you in the comptroller's office at all with money coming in?
Well, directly, no. Indirectly, yes. And what I mean by that is, you can't go up in the arch. So that hurts us in tourism. I'm really nervous at all of our airports right now because if we don't have air traffic controllers to help get the planes around, that would be a big issue for
people. By the way, I think we might need better air traffic controllers compared. I mean, this year has been unbelievable when it comes to.
But they warned us. They said it was during COVID. They said it takes an average of 7 years to get someone trained, right? And they said that they were losing 30%. For retirement,
right.
And they didn't have anybody coming behind, and they didn't know what to do, and computers aren't there yet. So they predicted this. And so one of the things people talked about was don't force these pilots to retire at 65 if they're very good and in good shape. My brother-in-law had to retire. He used to land airplanes. You know, he did an F-150. He did the...
But they have solid rules, right? You hit that age and then you're out.
But the feds could change it and they could come back and work till they're 70.
Government shutdown, Mike, is this thing going to linger on? It doesn't seem like. I thought maybe they'd have an end by the end of this week. It doesn't seem that way. But it can't go on forever. The last one was 35 days. I don't see the leverage on the part of the Democrats. So get it done. Talk about the subsidies after that and move forward. But we're going to do this whole damn thing in a month anyway.
You're in a unique place because you've got people like Chuck Schumer who have. He lost all his political capital earlier, and now he's fighting for his political life. Like they were talking about the other day, Trump even said he doesn't think Schumer can back down because if Schumer backs down now, he's done. So he's going to get primaried by AOC or somebody else if he backs down from this, and he can't afford to do it. I don't know if the other Democrats, if I don't know they can find eight of them to come along and vote for this. And if they don't, I don't see a pathway.
Yeah, and I don't know why they would, because the President Trump, at some things like you talked about in foreign affairs, his kind of bluster works. In this kind of bluster, the messaging fails him here. When he says, I'll never do a deal, I won't even meet with them, I'm going to lay people off, I don't really care. I mean, that works maybe when you're dealing with the Palestinians. That's not going to work with independent voters when they look at this. And I think he's going to end up getting blamed for this, and that's and with the midterms coming, is going to be a problem.
A year from now, we'll get the same group together. All right, nobody's going to talk about this government shutdown during the midterms. All right,
they won't be talking about it in 3 months.
But what's happening here is, you know, both sides are going to have this standoff. I just don't see there's any argument about who's causing the shutdown. All of the Republicans, except for Rand Paul, voted to keep the government open, and all of the Democrats voted to keep it closed. So where is there a dispute about that?
Because the president's rhetoric.
But the House has already voted for it open. It's all Senate.
He can't help himself. Right. But the president can't help himself. If he was more disciplined, you're right, they'd be winning the war of words. But he can't help himself. He has to be in the headlines. He has to be in the news. He has to control the narrative. And you know,
but, Jeff, this could have been so easy. You vote for the CR that you voted for in the spring, and then you move forward.
When the president's going to self-destruct in front of everybody, self-destruct with independence. Now, with his base.
Well, you're banking on that, I guess.
Well, just temporarily. You are correct. This will be, you know, by the time the election comes, we won't even remember this stuff. We barely remember Charlie Kirk. We have an attention span of a gnat in this country.
We do not have much of a time. On that, I think we agree. Hang on. We got one more segment to go. It's a Friday afternoon. That means a Reardon Roundtable. We just have a few minutes left with Donna Berenger, the St. Louis City Comptroller, Mike Elam from the St. Charles County Council, Jeff Rainford with Rainford & Associates. I want to talk, Rainford, about the Mizzou-Alabama game, but let me just say this first because we have difficulty drawing positive news to St. Louis, and you know our reputation nationwide isn't always the best. I'm hoping that all three of the people with me this afternoon know John O'Leary's story, which is incredible.
Yes.
He set himself on fire when he was 9 years old, accidentally playing with gasoline in his garage. He was left for dead. He wasn't told he was going to survive. His parents were told he wasn't. And then there's this weird, weird thing that happens with the legendary Jack Buck. And Jack Buck starts to visit him in the hospital. And this movie was filmed in St. Louis. So I was trying to think of another film that has been this St. Louis-centric with views of the Arch and other beautiful sites. There's 9 different locations they use. Wow. The MAC is featured. And I'll talk to John in a couple hours. But just outside of his story and outside of that interview, I just have to say that nationwide, and you can even see it in the commercials because they show the Arch in the commercials, we're getting a little bit of positive attention for this story.
One of the things about, and I'll let Donna jump in, I'll make it fast. One of the things about St. Louis, and we do, you know, and I'm probably a bigger critic in St. Louis than anyone since I grew up here, blah, 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 is on a per capita basis, we are among the most generous people in America. And we are Midwesterns. Midwesterners, we are kind. We say please and thank you and all those sorts of things. So, as you know, our government structure, everything is a mess. But we as individuals, I think, are really good people.
Yeah.
Elon was pointing up to the Fox screen because they had the ad for the movie.
There it
By
is.
The way, when Joe Courtney, who plays John O'Leary, is getting his diploma at SLU, the person handing him the diploma is the real John O'Leary. So he's got his cameo. All right, Rainford, break it down for me. Donna, you can feel free to do this too. I don't know if you're a college football expert. I'm going to the game tomorrow. I'm very excited. Mizzou, Alabama, 11 a.m. kickoff. Alabama started off the season in a rough way against Florida State. They were surprised. Their quarterback is really good. I watched the game against Vanderbilt last week. But Mizzou's good. And what you said before we started the show, I think, is interesting. Mizzou could be great. We just don't know that yet.
Yeah, they played a soft schedule. They two teams they beat are ranked 35th, 36th in the country. But they dominated them statistically. The games were a little bit closer. Mizzou runs the ball really, really well. Alabama's run defense is not very good. Alabama throws the ball very well. Our pass defense is not very good. We're coming off a bye week. This will be their third straight difficult game.
Yeah.
We don't know how good Mizzou is. It wouldn't shock me if Mizzou came out tomorrow and won by 20. And to be honest with you, it wouldn't shock me if they lost by 20. We just don't know how good they are. I'm looking forward to seeing.
I think what you just said there is so right. It would not surprise me if they rolled us, but it would also not surprise me if we won the game. Probably not as much as maybe 2 touchdowns. I'll take whatever, but the fans and the stadium will be rocking tomorrow for sure. It looks weird in there, by the way. I don't know if you've been there with the south end zone work that they're doing. The north end zone work. It's crazy because that's where the M was. So
they took that
they're
out.
They're making the arena's going to be an entire bowl.
Oh.
They are still going to have an M. But it's weird because in a lot of the TV coverage, I don't think they're trying to show you the construction, but it looks bizarre in there. But when that thing is done by next season, wow.
If we win tomorrow, we will now be on the national stage. The national guys are kind of holding off on Mizzou because we haven't beaten anybody yet. If we win tomorrow, we'll be on the national stage.
Yeah, in other words, if we win tomorrow, we will be legitimately in the conversation for the college football playoff. Rainford, great to see you. Mike Elam, thanks for hanging out.
Thank you.
Donna, it was good to see you. Haven't seen you in a while. Thank you, guys. That wraps the Reardon Roundtable. Jane will be back next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
what
people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.